Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Yes.
Oh, very lurch of you.
I am the one who knocks.
Oh, no. What's that, the ghost of Mr. White Past or something?
I am the danger.
Say my name!
I think Walter White would be more like a poltergeist. He had some real pent up issues going on.
He'd be a poltergeist. I could see that. He'd be causing a ruckus. Bastard.
Well, in any case, tonight we are not talking about poltergeists. We are going to be geez, Bill, what's that smell? Come on, man.
It was the dog.
Sure, Bill, sure. I didn't know you could smell. I didn't know podcasts were done in smell-o-vision, but apparently we've reached that point.
A very John Waters of you.
Yes, say. Thank you very much. and tonight, The Last Knock is the filthiest podcast in the podcast world. No, we're not talking about Pink Flamingos, and no, we're not talking about scatology in horror, though maybe one day we will.
Oh, boy.
That'll just be a show about Sallow, I guess.
I don't know. No, I'm working on a new script. Who knows, Johnny?
Sallow 2, Electric Boogaloo. We are talking about sewers in horror.
Woo! We're going low.
Yeah, I know, Bill, as if we couldn't scrape the barrel enough.
Barrel you don't want to scrape.
Yeah. That's where we are. We're going to talk about sewers as a setting, perhaps some symbolism, like the literal and metaphorical qualities of, hey, what's it mean when your movie or your story is centering around that, or at least in part as a place where your characters descend to and, you know, usually encounter something unpleasant that they have to fight or vanquish.
Indeed.
Yes, all of these things will be discussed tonight.
Awesome.
And in any case, Bill, maybe I'll lead us with a question here and
sure. We'll
interweave some film talk in between the stinky sewer talk. Mm-hmm. Well, what comes to mind when you think of sewer or a gutter or something like that? What are the connotations?
For me, when I think of a sewer, I think, shit, my Frisbee went down there. That's what I think, man.
Or your paper boat, yeah.
I forget the shirt of boat. I lost so many Frisbees to the sewers of Kearney, New Jersey, you can't even imagine. They would always find it like a perfect like air hockey slot. And my brother made, my dad, whatever. You know, we took a hanger, you know, we put a little hook on it so we could, like, you know, lay down in the street and dig down under the grate and get the edge and pull it up. That's what I remember, man. And I remember once there was a cat trapped down there with a couple of kittens. And,
aww.
No, we put up a board and then, you know, cats came out. But it's like, it stinks down there, Johnny. It's not pleasant, man. It's not fucking pleasant.
Well, Bill, you bring up kind of an interesting point. The sewer where your Frisbee disappears, or where your hockey puck disappears when you're playing street hockey. You know, there's this notion of looking down. Mm-hmm. There's kind of almost like a morbid curiosity. Like I know I still do this. Like if I'm walking over an open sewer grate, like one of those big ones, kind of. Yeah. I'll look down to see what weird shit is down there.
Yeah,
me
too. Is that a body? You know, it's like
it's usually like Baby Ruth wrappers and stuff. Yeah. But you know, it's still. I just gotta look. Like what? There's like sometimes there's vegetation growing down there. You know, you can see.
It's a whole ecosystem.
Yeah, it really kind of is. So it's kind of fascinating. Like we're. You know, even though it stinks and there's all these like, oh, it's just like sludge and human waste and just wastewater and all that stuff.
Rats.
Yeah, just totally unsanitary. Nothing good can come
bacteria.
from it. Yeah, so it's like I think maybe there is this morbid curiosity we possess, just like, oh well, I'm not, this doesn't appeal to me in the slightest, but it's kind of like, oh, I am kind of curious to see just what might be down there. What if there is the dead body down there? Or what if there are the cats that need saving by some good-hearted neighborhood boys, you know?
Oh yeah, and I always thought, I mean, one of my fears as a kid was like getting caught in a storm and getting washed down the sewer, and then you're trapped and you're drowned in this muck and crud and can't get out, and it's just like that. Because we used to have the sewers flood by me once in a while, and once in a while you would hear the manhole cover from the pressure pop,
Oh, wow.
and it would go up and it would clang on a street, and then a car would always hit that open hole, and it would just sound like it just ripped the car in half.
Oh, shit.
And
Yeah.
I was like, what if I was trapped down there trying to get out and a fucking car came, ah, you know. Meanwhile, I'm 9 and I'm like, what's wrong with me? It's like.
Hey, Bill, you know what? Those are the things I thought about. Actually, I still think about that shit, so yeah.
Oh man.
It's like choose your own adventure in your head. Yeah.
Yeah, 'cause like what's down there? Are there people living there? Oh, we'll get to that soon.
Yes. Well, Bill, so I think you've talked about some of like the literal qualities that make, that bring sort of a morbid curiosity to the sewer.
Right.
I mean, what do you think? I mean, I know we were talking about this before the show, and we kind of had a hard time coming up with films that were sewer specific or used the sewer as a kind of just like a partial setting in
Yeah,
horror.
I had about maybe four films, and then Palko, Greg Palko, palkodesigns.com, called and before the show, and he gives me another one, and that I didn't see and that I probably don't want to see. And
Oh, I'm intrigued now. Yeah. But I mean, I guess I was thinking when I came up with the idea for this, I was like, oh man, yeah, sewers. That's like a lot. There's a lot of sewers in horror movies. And I'm like, well, maybe there's not.
No, there isn't. Not
And
really.
maybe that's why the couple that I had in my mind were kind of like, oh, that why they stuck out so much was because there were anomalies, maybe.
Yeah, that, and you like, if you think from a filming sense, it's like, okay, man, well, we're gonna film in the sewers. No, you're not. I mean, you're not gonna do it. I mean, most sewers are actually really small, cramped places. We usually see these sewers in movies that are like almost tunnel-esque, with like a center, like man-made stream of crud going through it, and little edges that people could walk on, rats swimming or walking along these edges, lights. There's no fucking lights, man. You gotta bring your own light down there. Every sewer guy I've ever seen in my life, he brings a light down with him. There,
Oh
you
yeah.
know, and it's like that's it. And yes, there are places that, depending on the area, they have these vast cavernous, areas. That's true. I've seen them in Japan, but that's for flooding purposes only and such. And certain cities where they don't have the luxury of a sewer system per se, and they actually have like this underground like chutes and stuff, come on, man. I mean, every time I see a guy get in a sewer, it takes him like he's wiggling his way down there. He's wearing clothes that he'll never wear again. It's like, who's going in a hole? I don't want to go in a hole. You're the new guy. Get in a fucking hole. I don't want to go in a hole. And it's like they shove him down there, and they're not that vast. So filming is a nightmare. So you have to make your own damn set, probably, or find something and make believe it's a sewer. But again, it's usually like so big. It's like, was this a tunnel for a railroad? I mean, like that's not really, sewers for wastewater,
You know what, Bill, you bring up, that's a really good point. And a movie, it's not technically considered horror, but just to throw it out as an example, is I was thinking of the sequence in The Machinist where Christian Bale's getting, where he's running from, I guess, the police station, and they chase him through a subway station, and then he somehow winds up down in a sewer, which coincidentally looks like a subway tunnel, you know? with that, you know, man, that little stream of, you know, dark water going down the center. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a big deal, the human-sized tunnels and everything like that. So,
well, they make them small and cramped so people don't go into them. You know what I mean? It's like, can you imagine, like, how, like, just because I would have been that kid. Hey, let's walk in the sewer. Well, maybe I would have. I don't know. Now I would. Back then, maybe not. But, you know, the whole thing is, it's like they want to prevent people from walking into the sewers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you see all these drainage pipes and stuff, and they're a certain diameter. They're not really extreme.
Well, you know, something else interesting, Bill, is that and I know we've talked about both of these on the show, so I'm not going to talk about them too much, but you know, It, the miniseries, the movie, and the book. The book is actually, you know, it takes place in 1958 and 1985, respectively. And King is really good. You know, I'd say the book is probably the most accurate depiction of a sewer, you know, out of all of those different versions of it, because he actually presents it as cramped, confined, and you're like up to your waist in shit and, you know, God knows what else trying to get through him.
Yeah,
so he,
So
he was like, I think he was like really probably looking at the, all right, he probably took a look down a sewer himself or had someone from the the municipal building like walk him down to give him a look at what it looked like or whatever. And he was like, yeah, this is small as hell and it would be cramped and confined and that's what I'm going to present in the book. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have no doubt he did that. And I mean, you can't get any better, greater fear than that.
Oh, greater fear, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my God. Anyway, and that was sort of captured in. Well, I think we're going to talk about it because I think it's a sewer system. I was just thinking of Oklahoma Ward's film.
I believe you're right. Yeah,
starring the lovely and vivacious Nicole M. Alonzo, Nikki Alonzo. So
yep.
Crawl
or die.
Yeah, and yeah, and that's why that was one of the things that bothered me in the movie. It was, you know, like the end. You know, it's like mm-hmm. his lair. I'm like, dude, was that like a giant? Was that like a missile silo that the government abandoned? Like, what the frig, man? Just like, who would build such a thing? And like, I don't know. It just that was a little nonsensical for me. I don't know if that mirrors the book, but
Are you talking about the recent movie, Bill?
Yeah. If that mirrors the book where his lair is like this massive silo of like, you know.
The movie took a lot of liberties with the book, including that. So
gotcha.
Not that I think it's the book kind of creates its own exaggerated final location mm-hmm. for it, but it's a bit more plausible, I'd say, from an engineering standpoint.
Well, I was also wondering how much is this in his own mind that he's projecting onto these kids, but it didn't seem like, in the end, it didn't seem like he was projecting anything. And I'm like, this is right under a mountain in a beautiful area. They got this massive friggin', like, dude, I'd be hanging out there all day long. This is like, this could be my secret house. It's like a size of an apartment building, man.
Well, what's interesting, Bill, is that I think you're right. It wasn't projection or anything because early on in the film, one of the kids passes by the top of it. Like you see it sticking up out of the ground a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that was just there. And for whatever reason, it was built the way it was. So
yeah, and they cut the line where he said, look, Hitler's bunker. It's like, oh, my God.
They lose me after the bunker sequence.
Oh, my gosh. But before we continue, if anyone wants to know, and I'm sure they do, so what is a sewer from an imagery standpoint, a symbolism of a sewer? And it obviously it signifies something like, you know, putrid conditions, but also can relate to old relationships. Mm. It's something that has gone past its due, it's done, it's dead, it's gone. So it's something that needs to be cleaned up. Or instantly changed. So it could be also relating to a problem in your life and let go of these old, outdated ideas and beliefs. And so according to, what is it, dreammoods.com, To see a sewer pipe in your dream represents the flow of subconscious material being suppressed deeper and deeper.
Wow.
Something makes sense to me.
You know what, Bill? I agree with that. And you know what? We were just talking about it, and memory and relationships really plays a huge part in all of those, you know, all of those versions of that story.
Sure. Absolutely. It's a centerpiece.
Yeah, and at first I was thinking King just had this random idea to stick a clown down in the sewer, but now it's like, okay, I'm thinking about it in a different way now. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the whole element of, like, family defining it for yourself, because these kids have, you know, especially a couple of them have really awful family lives.
Mm-hmm.
And their new Scooby gang is their family, which is great. And the whole thing about, you know, a clown... and I think I know why King did it, and it makes perfect sense, is you have this clown, which some people are scared of to begin with, so that's great, got mm-hmm. a clown in a sewer, but the whole contrast between you have this colorful figure in the muck and mire, the shithole of the world that you don't want to go to, but he's like, oh, come here, and it's like, oh, but it's a clown, he's got a balloon, you know, it's like he's going to give me candy, he won't bite my arm off, you know what I mean, and like, I got your boat, oh, okay, I'm coming over, Mr. Clown, you know, it's like...
Can you smell the circus, Billy?
Ah, dude, that's creepy. I won't be able to sleep tonight. You bastard. But no, so I think that contrast of, like, you know, color and darkness and absolute, like, the sewer to me also represents the abyss.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what really happens in the sewer. We don't really know where the stuff goes. Like, where does this stuff empty out to? Well, now we know it goes to maybe a waste facility plant, mm-hmm. but... still, it's like we don't know how the city is underneath that whole subterranean area, you know? And I'm just going to correct myself because I was just thinking of – no, this is for fresh water in New York. They're building these tunnels that are massive. They've been doing it for like decades. But that's not an outgoing line. That's an incoming line. But but still, you know, we don't know – what happens beneath the sewer, and we don't want to.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Bill. Like a certain element of, well, that's someone else's problem. They deal with whatever it is that goes on down there. We're kind of more comfortable not knowing.
Yeah, I paid my taxes, so I don't have to know.
Exactly. And you know what, Bill? It kind of ties into another movie, and it might be one of the king daddies of sewer horror films. It's a 1984's Chud.
Oh yeah, I had a funny feeling that would come up just a little bit.
Well, that one kind of like shot to the front of my head when I first yeah.
Oh, I think that's the premier sewer related movie.
Well, and it ties into kind of, you know, the not wanting to know thing, because it's like the local government doesn't want to address this weird phenomenon of people getting pulled down into the sewers and showing up as monsters later on or whatever. It's and it ties into kind of the whole, not to sound pretentious, but like the whole Reagan era that the film was taking place in. It's like, well,
oh yeah, perfect, yeah.
Just push the problem of homelessness aside. Well, who cares if the homeless are getting off the streets? Who cares if they're getting turned into monsters down, you know,
right,
down in the sewers and living down there and just randomly picking people off. It's, you know, we don't see it. It's not our problem until it's like right in front of our face, kind of.
Oh, I know. Shepard Abbott came up with the story idea, and the screenplay was, you know, written by Parnell Hall. Although apparently Christopher Curry and Daniel Stern are uncredited with having their little paws in some of the writing. But, yeah, it's about, you know, it takes place in the city, you know, where a woman gets taken, which in the story, I believe it actually turns out, like if you get the director's cut, you find out that it was like John Hurd's wife.
His oh, character, yeah.
He played George Cooper. Daniel Stern's awesome as AJ to Reverend Shepard. And,
yeah.
And so he's like, it's a conspiracy, man, you know, because all the subterranean transient people are disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a twofold reason for that, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And I wish the movie had been written better, but it's about creating your own monsters. It's not just ignoring homeless people, but what you, by helping create this population, possibly, you can, you create a monster. You know, it's a Frankensteinian in many ways. It's a little ludicrous in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
Just the whole Godzilla-type thing that they took from the 50s, like with Tarantula and Them, is radioactive material will cause you to become a cannibalistic human underground dweller.
And you get glowing eyes, too, so it's awesome.
You know, I would do it for the glowing eyes. I would definitely do it, because that's cool. Chicks dig it. I heard chicks dig it.
Yeah, so, yeah, Chud's a good one. And actually, Bill, I think you were alluding to, like, the commentary track, which is hugely entertaining on that disc if you
I've never heard it.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, if you can probably find the old Anchor Bay DVD cheap. So, you know, it's definitely worth listening to. It's like a real chummy getting the group back together kind of commentary.
Yeah, that's cool. But, I, you know, I wish they had gone further, like, in regards to the whole, you know, symbolic imagery element. You know, it sort of became its own little monster. Like, maybe they were drinking too much when they were, like, after the first act. And they're like, yeah, let's do this and that. I don't know. Just.
Well, apparently there was this whole scene where the one character, the woman gets attacked in her apartment, which was apparently just, like, shoehorned into the film, kind of. Like this, it was just like this gratuitous like shower scene where she gets blood spattered on her or something like that.
Yeah. You know, because it was cool that, you know, they have to come to the surface because of certain reasons. And it would just, I just wish they had gone a little bit deeper with the writing.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely stuff there that you can like pull from it kind of that's, you know, reflective of something a bit deeper thematically, politically, maybe.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. I think at its core, it really is kind of like, it's a 60s drive-in movie, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And the cool thing is we have our people above ground, one complaining, one investigating, and they both, and to both, to figure it out, they both have to go down. They both have to get dirty. They have to go down. They have to figure out what the hell's going on, and they can't speculate. You got to go see it for yourself. So they crawl into the, you know, they get into the sewers and well, you need to watch it to see what happens. It's fun. I mean, it's a fun film. And,
yeah. I mean, it has a following for a reason. So yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we know the Criterion Collection did that, April Fool's Day joke many moons ago where they said that they were going to release Chud. Everybody was like,
I wish that were true.
What the hell, man? And then Arrow released it, you know, shortly after. But that was funny. And yeah, it's poked fun at, but it's also one of those films. I forgot one guy said, you know, this is one of those late night, weary eyed movies that can only be watched then because any other time it wouldn't work. And it's hard to argue. It's hard to argue. I think I watched it at 2 a.m. I'm like, oh, I could see this movie working.
<You know? laughs> Well, you know, Bill, something interesting about the use of the sewer as a location and maybe why, you know, another reason why a lot of movies don't take place entirely in a sewer system, with maybe the exception of Crawl or Die, is just the fact that, you know, people don't want, even when they're down there, they don't want to be down there. They just want to do whatever it is they have to do and just get out again because, you know, a lot of movies I see, the sewer is more like an easier way to get from point A to point B than taking the above ground
route. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, you're right. Yeah, it's a bypass. It's
yeah, because you know an you
alternate route.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, an alternate route. No, I was agreeing with you, man. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, so I was like, there's a couple movies that kind of have that. Oh, well, I mean. Actually, just popped into my head was the Dawn of the Dead remake, which is how they access the sewer to go over on a rescue mission to get to get Andy and to get some ammunition for their weapons, which, you know, obviously doesn't turn out
as planned.
like they hope it will. The other movie is actually, it's another Stephen King. It's the much derided Maximum Overdrive from 1986.
Oh man, Johnny, I'm sick. I feel like I just walked in a sewer.
You know what, Bill? That movie does kind of stink. But it's interesting because it's the only movie Stephen King directed, and he wrote the thing too. So the whole blame lies with him for how that turned out.
And he'd admit it too.
Oh yeah, he's since gone on to say that's why he's never done another one, because I think there was a bit of hubris and a bit of
a movie. No.
Yeah, and I mean, there is a lot of idiosyncratic stuff in that film with the characters and how they're written and everything. And the sewer scene is kind of funny because, you know, you have Emilio Estevez, who's like a short order cook, you know, leading some of these people from one place to another via the sewer tunnels. And there's this guy who's such a, he's so nerdy and so weird, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But he's married to Yardley Smith, who went on to voice Lisa Simpson.
Yes.
and he's like, you know, they're going through the sewer and Emilio Estevez is like splashing and stuff and rats are going by and stuff. And the guy's like, how's it taste and everything?
You bastard.
It's just like it's such a bizarre sequence and just such a bizarre movie kind mm-hmm. of. But, you know, in any case, I just thought that was interesting. It's like two instances of where the sewer is more of a, I don't know if I'd call it a convenience, but just another option kind of.
Lazy writing, maybe?
that too, yeah.
No, but, you know, you brought up Crawl or Die again. And one of the things is, you know, we have our heroine crawling with a group of people, obviously, in the subterranean underground, trying to you know, move a package along, and they're being attacked, alien creature, and every step they take in the dark is the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going into the abyss, it's unknown, and things get smaller and smaller and more compressed, more claustrophobic, more suffocating. You know, and I know I said this on the show before, you know, it was putting me into panic attack mode, you know, watching what Nikki Alonso was suffering, and more suffering is coming her way because, you know, Crawl or Die 2 is in pre-production. But, mm-hmm. You know, and that's one of the things, like, we didn't know what she was getting into. She didn't know what she was getting into. She had no idea where she was going, but she knew if she stopped or if she went back, she would die. So it was just like, no matter what she did, it could all, like, you know, be shot to hell. And, that movie was just so oppressive. Oh, jeez.
That really is a film, Bill, where it's the experiences of watching it is so visceral. And I have claustrophobia.
Oh, you do? So, holy shit, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, so it really worked me over in the same way, like some scenes in The Descent worked me over, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the look on her face and the breathing and like the sweat, I was like, and there was a lot of times where I was going, Nikki's not acting. You know, she's like really, she's really suffering and she's going to like beat the shit out of Oklahoma as soon as he yells cut and she can get out of whatever the hell she's stuck under, you know?
Absolutely.
but I think that's, you know, part of the, like you said, there's this allure and this repulsion with the sewer because it's the unknown. It's the thing you're not supposed to go into. So as soon as, you can't go down there, it's a sewer, it's suddenly you sort of want to because someone said you can't. And I'm actually looking at a sewer grate while I'm recording this right now outside my window.
Uh-huh.
So it's, something's moving in there. No, I'm kidding. But I could see the grate and it is. It's like, well, where does it go? What happens? Is something under there? And did some kid salamander get loose at home? Like, you know, like, who knows, you know? But and that's one of the movies actually that Palco brought up was Alligator. You saw it?
No, I haven't. Have you?
No, I haven't. But
I want to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, so do I. It's based on the urban legend of, you know, people like, oh, we got a pet alligator. Oh, it's too big. you know, and they dump it down the sewer, and then you have these all these alligators breeding in the sewers in like New York City. I'm sure they were doing a lot of breeding and surviving in the winters in New York. And lo and behold, you know, they survive. But this particular alligator is eating like radioactive sewer rats. But, well, not sewer rats, but they're flushed from like a bio farm company. And they're all infected with something, and it eats this stuff, and it grows. So you're like, you know where this is going. And reminds me of an episode of the New Avengers where it was called Gnaws, not Jaws, but Gnaws, G-N-A-W-S, and something like that happened with a giant sewer rat. And
Wow.
So that's it. It's like, you know, people flushing their snakes or something like that. And what if they come out? Once in a while, you'll see, like, every year, like, every news station runs this thing. Can a rat crawl up from the sewer and into your toilet? And they show it every time. And it's like, yes, a rat can do that. And it's like, why are you showing me this? Why are you showing me this? Because I got to go to the bathroom, and now I want a bucket. Because I'm not putting my ass on a bowl with some, like, rat that's going to freaking come up and bite my balls off. Damn. Or a snake. And I've seen... You know, people have like, oh yeah, snake got through. It came up into the toilet, and I'm like, come on, man, this is wrong.
Did these people just get indoor plumbing, Bill? That's my question. Yeah,
I don't know, man, but I'm using a bucket for now on. Screw this crap.
That sounds good. You can take it wherever you go. So that's you know.
Carry the sewer with you. How's that for a slogan?
Stuck in gridlock traffic. Bring the bucket over.
Bring me the bucket.
Bring me a bucket. I'm going to be sick.
Oh, man. So what other movies do you have in mind regarding this distasteful, shitty topic of ours?
You know what, Bill? One I saw recently, like the whole way through, and I really enjoyed, even though it is kind of like Chud in a way, it's like really, it's just a glorified B-picture. Albeit on a huge Hollywood budget for the time, was Species from 1995.
Oh my God.
No love for Species, Bill?
I have issues, man. I have issues with that movie.
You know what? I had issues with it too, but overall I was like, fast pace. I thought the characters were pretty cool. You know, Mike, good to see a time when Michael Madsen could, you know,
rock his role.
Yeah. Yeah. Back during his mid-90s heyday. And it sort of introduced the world to the beauty that is Natasha Henstridge. Mm-hmm. And my God, true story. There was a girl I knew in high school who was like a redheaded version of her. And
damn, man.
I'm still not quite over it. So anyway,
who would be? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
She was like a redheaded version, but she kind of had the sort of goth thing going on, so.
Oh, you're killing me, man. I want pictures. But anyway, that's another story for another time.
I'm killing myself with nostalgia. So anyway.
Well, look, man. I mean, look at the cast. Ben Kingsley, Alfred Molina, Forrest Whitaker, Mark Helgenberger, Michelle Williams. Holy mother.
And I was like, I had no idea. When I watched it, I was like, oh my God, that's Michelle Williams, tiny Michelle Williams.
Yes, tiny.
Pre-Dawson's Creek, yeah.
Damn straight.
But, you know, as with a lot of films, you know, we'll talk about, Bill, it's the conclusion takes place underground. It takes place in the L.A. sewers.
Yeah, it does.
And I think it's where the creature that Natasha Henstridge is morphed into.
Yes.
Is going to lay her eggs or, you know, give birth basically to more little baby aliens. So it's up to the protagonist to follow her down there with all sorts of heavy artillery and weird ass weapons and take her out. And it's totally a cheesy conclusion. You know, it's very much pulled from a recurring theme here, like 1950s or 1960s B movie.
Sure. Sure.
You know, only it has it's the alien angle instead of the nuclear toxic waste angle going right on.
It's 23 years old, man. Sorry, go ahead.
I know. Whenever I think about stuff from the 90s that I grew up watching or, you know, watched, I was like, oh my God, I'm so God, I'm so old now.
Yeah, it's into mine, man, but it is weird.
Yeah, it's just like, oh man. But anyway, I just thought that was a good example, because a lot of that last act takes place down in the sewers and catacombs or whatever the hell is under Los Angeles.
So what do you think what do you think that had to, you know, what that did for the story? Like, what were they saying by that? Like, so they could have just, was it so convenient, out of storytelling convenience, so they could have like a giant fight blow up scene with, you know, her away from prying eyes? Or was there something actually, you know, there's more merit to it than that?
You know, Bill, I didn't really think about it till now, but you know, the most of the film takes the form of this kind of frenetic chase movie where they're running all over Los Angeles trying to catch her. So it's a very fast paced film.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the writers just saw it as an attempt to like make things more intimate, maybe more confined, just
mm-hmm.
less open, maybe by putting them in that sort of a confined setting.
Yeah.
You know, where you're not familiar with what's around the corner, kind of, and you have less ability to see what's around that corner, kind of like in Crawl or Die. It kind of ups the stakes and ups the suspense maybe a little more.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I mean, it worked for me, so that's what I'll leave it at. But,
that's all yeah. that matters, man. I think every filmmaker should be like, hey, would it work for Johnny Numb? Because I mean, they're not doing it for me, man.
I mean, the horror movies I've watched lately, Bill, they're really not taking that into consideration, and I'm really upset about it. So, yeah.
ain't that the truth, though, man? Ain't that the truth? They're not taking it into consideration, the sons of bitches, man.
It's really hard when you've like heard a lot of good things about horror movies and you finally watched it and it's like, oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Oh, but anyway, yes,
indeed.
What about you, Bill? You got another movie or another observation to bring up on the sewer system?
No, it would just be nice to, if we want, no, because I know like some of the movies I want to mention aren't sewers, and that doesn't fit this. They're subterranean. I mean, they're under a city,
mm-hmm.
But. They're not sewers per se. I
do have one if it didn't come to your mind.
Yeah, though. Go ahead.
Well, I'll let you talk about it because I know you love this movie. It's Them from 1954.
Oh, you know, I was thinking of Them, but I was thinking, is that a sewer or is that more of a drainage facility that they're in? You know, it's Los Angeles, the drainage areas for, you know, water runoff.
Well, I'll put it this
Does
way.
Does that constitute a sewer?
I'll put it this way. I'll admit, I looked at a list online to get some ideas, and I believe this was on Den of Geek's 10 Finest Sewers of B-Movie Cinema.
All right. Well, then we'll take it.
So I'd say it counts. So talk about it, Bill.
Damn straight. Oh, Them is fantastic. That is one of my early – that's, I think, my early favorite horror movie for me. You know, 53.
Me too.
Oh, cool. And I got – the edition I have is amazing. It was one of the best prints ever of a black and white film on a DVD, and it's not not a Blu-ray. Nuclear testing in the desert. What happens? Radiation leads to giant ants, and the sounds in the movie will scare the crap out of you. It's But we have to battle these ants, and of course we have the flying ants, and they're going to become a queen, and they're going to create a bigger colony, and it must be stopped. So where are they going? They're going underground. They go underground in the city of Los Angeles, and the army's got to go in and get these damn giant bugs and take them out. And, you know, so it's like, it's post-World War II, so everybody's like, get in there, you know, come on, Tom, you know, you know, and all that crap. And so the big fight scene is to get the nest in the heart of Los Angeles before all hell breaks loose again. And that's what I loved. I loved that transition from the desert to L.A. from it's like, ah, giant ants in the desert. Wow, that's really horrible. But no, they're on a mission, man, and they're marching. They're marching towards the ocean. It's like things aren't going to be pretty. And I just really loved that. And the whole element with them It was great because they portrayed in the film this vastness of the desert as being creepy as hell. And then it's like, now you got to go get them on their home turf underground, you know, in the cement and metal that you created. And you created this whole problem by doing your nuclear testing, which created these giant ants. And now you got to destroy your children, so to speak. And it's the government going after them. So it's like the government created this monster. We're going to put an end to it in a post-birth abortion kind of way. And it's creepy and cool. And it has a real chilling factor to it. It still freaks me out. Still freaks me out every time I watch it.
You know, Bill, it's probably been like, poof. It's probably been like 25 years since I last watched that movie.
Holy hell, man.
Not since I was like a kid. But you know what you're saying about the sound effects and everything, that like chirping noise.
That and the wind. Oh, my God.
You know, you're right. All that stuff is really effective. And I kind of like I got to ask you a question, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you know the answer. How did the ants get from the desert down into the sewers?
Well, as ants are apt to do,
Mr. Science.
No, well, you know, the funny thing is, it's like, you know, thinking about it now, it's like, well, they would have just built a friggin', you know, nest in a desert. I mean, you know, they got all this, you know, they would have just made a giant friggin' ant colony there. Yeah. But, I don't know. Maybe it's because of their radiation affected their ant brains, man. And they're like, "Hey, look, that place is already dug out. We'll just go in there." I don't know. I have no fucking clue, man. I'm not an entomologist, dude. We should have John Levengood on here, man.
I know. You know what? There was one that I saw that I was like, "Oh my god!" I just want to bring it up to hear what he thinks of it.
Well, he doesn't know it now, but we're going to have him on a show because we're going to talk bug horror with that guy.
We totally got to get some perspective on that. Yeah.
Straight.
Yeah.
But MFF Horror Corner, if people didn't know.
Absolutely. But I was, you know, I saw, and I'm not going to talk about this one for long because it really didn't leave much of an impression on me, was the Guillermo del Toro film Mimic from 97.
Yeah, it's good and bad, and it's more – that was subterranean, but again, to me that was more subway than anything else. Old subway tunnel shit.
Nah, okay. Fair enough.
Because I could bring up – there's other movies I could, you know.
Well, then, I mean, go ahead, man.
Well, As Above, So Below.
Oh, you're talking about like catacombs. Subway stuff. Yeah.
That's a great found footage film.
It's effective, yeah.
It is effective. The movie The Catacombs from several years ago, Pink is in it. It's an okay movie. It's not great, but the soundtrack is friggin' incredible. But whether it's a sewer or the catacombs, it's like we're going beneath the city. We're going into a place where people do not dwell, where there's no sun, where there's stale air, where it smells like crap and you're not supposed to go. And I saw a picture of a guy who got lost in the catacombs of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
They eventually found his body, and he died from, you know, starvation and lack of water. And his body was just all, you know, he was rotting.
Yeah.
This kid who, like, broke into the catacombs instead of going with a tour group. Yeah, I'm going to run around, and it's going to be great. And it's not. You know, he didn't make it. I'm sure he's not the first, and he won't be the last. You know, we're drawn into the dark. We're drawn into the unknown. At least a lot of people are. And, you know, we want to see what's going on in there. We don't necessarily want to get dirty. We don't necessarily want to get hurt. But we want to see something that other people do not see. And that's, yeah, I think, part of that allure.
Yeah, and that's a good explanation as any, Bill. One that I thought about was the conclusion. Again, a lot of these films take to the sewers for the conclusion. And it's Larry Cohen's It's Alive with the mutant baby.
Oh my God. Yes.
Now, Bill, I'm curious. I haven't watched it in a while, but what do you think? Maybe the film sort of lays out a rationale for why the climax of that film takes place in the sewer tunnels. Maybe it's the, what you were talking about, with the with them that it wasn't really a sewer. It was more the
drainage system.
Drainage system. But I still think of it as a sewer. What do you think the reasoning was behind having that final act take place down in the sewers?
You know, I'm not really sure, because this baby thing, there's nobody to kill in the sewers. And that thing was a hyper predator, man.
Yeah.
So it didn't make sense for me that it went down there unless it was trying to hide or get back to a protective womb-like place that was warm and wet and enclosed, and it would be alone.
You know, Bill, I think I've actually seen readings of the film that say just that about it. I mean, I think the baby is being pursued by the police and also by his father, who initially is horrified by the child, but eventually comes to, like, you know, it is still his child. So
it's
at the end,
it's my spawn.
I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my child.
My wife wasn't supposed to have a child. Sorry. Brian Cox, love you. Sorry, that's the ring. It's nothing to do with this. Go ahead, Johnny.
But in any case, yeah, it's kind of interesting, because I was wondering if the baby just felt cornered, kind of, and just was thinking, just saw that as a place that would emulate, like you were saying, like a womb-like setting.
Well, and if that's the case, then that's even scarier, because it means this underdeveloped little creepy thing had advanced intelligence to, like, really figure that crap out. Or it was going based on animalistic instincts. I mean, you corner an animal, even a shy, nice, vegetarian-eating animal, that thing becomes instantly vicious because it knows it's life or death.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And, you know, for that thing to, like, bow out and, you know, try and pick a place where it could either regroup or grow and really wreak havoc, that'd be something else. And that's the movie I want to see. The It's Alive baby that survives. Like, what happens later?
Well, they did make two more, Bill.
Yeah, I know. I know they did. Michael Moriarty, who crushed his roles.
They did a remake, too, which I heard was pretty bad.
Oh, I don't want to see that.
Yeah. Well, I'll just mention this one quick, just because of historical value. Lon Chaney's of Phantom of the Opera. He's...
Oh, my God.
I know. I mean, and the sewer tends to get integrated into pretty much any telling of that story, but it really plays a big part in the silent film.
Yes, that's all I'm thinking of right now. It's just so... It's vibrant. What a stage. What a backdrop. Damn.
And it really is just as, like, creepy now as it was back then, I think.
Yep.
What they do with the sewer as a setting. It's like sort of the contrast of, you got this beautiful opera house, and then underneath it you got the catacombs, you've got the sewer system. So there's that kind of dichotomy of beauty and horror going on with the settings and the characters too. So
yeah, and it's almost like he's embracing this, you know, like, I'm a denizen of the deep kind of thing, and, you know, it's like, this is my lair, this is my home, my new world where I am master.
And he's kind of like caught between two worlds, I think, because he still loves loves music, loves to play the music,
loves women,
but he's kind of given over to the dark side. So,
oh yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
the dark, stinky side.
Absolutely. Well, I've got two more, Bill, and
let's
hear
it.
I know this one we can both talk about.
All right.
Another horror film where the conclusion takes place down in the sewers, and it's something of another eco-conscious creature feature. It's Juan Peeker Simon's Slugs.
Oh, Slugs. I love that movie. That's like, I'm like, what the hell's going on, man? It was like, it's one of those, it's so bad, it's awesome kind of movies.
Oh, it really is.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Slugs. Oh, and that's great. I mean, the sewer's perfect. Slimy slugs beneath your feet and the sewer. Eh, it's perfect, man. Perfect combination. That was great. Oh, my God. Slugs.
Yeah, they used to play that like on basic cable a lot when I was little.
Oh man, dude, I want a Blu-ray of that.
I think Arrow actually put out a special edition of it.
Love you, Arrow.
Actually, yeah, I'll get that for your birthday, Bill.
Woohoo!
It's like, here, Billy. It's like, oh, thanks, Johnny. You got me slugs. Oh, yeah. But the do you have any more, Bill, or are you kind of tapped?
No, dude, I'm done, man. I was like sewer based, or like I didn't go for the part of the movie in the sewer thing. But go ahead, man. What else you got?
Well, I'll just say this one quick since we brought it up at the beginning of the show, or not. We brought it up before the show. What the fuck was Tony Burgess thinking when he wrote Septic Man?
God, what an awful, awful, awful movie.
It was one of my worst movies of a couple years back.
Yeah, and Tony Burgess, who brought us the brilliant Pontypool and the phenomenal book, Septic Man, is abysmal. A septic guy goes down to clean the part of the sewer, and he gets infected, and it's just...
He turns into the Toxic Avenger.
And it's just bad. It's just bad and dumb. And boy, I hate it even more now than I did 10 minutes ago.
Well, and I'm sad because I mean he wasn't in it that much, but the great Stephen McHattie, I guess they phoned in a favor from him because he shows up in a couple scenes, like on a TV.
Yep, he does.
Yeah, but man, Stephen McHattie deserves so much better.
He was the mayor. Yeah, you could tell that those were like add-on scenes after, and he didn't even know. And it's like he took his money, and you know they paid him for whatever. And boy, that was awful.
I do hope he got compensated in some way for that movie.
Yeah, if you're gonna compensate me, take my name off of it. That's what I cut my fucking scenes. Yeah, that's really it's so poorly executed, nonsensical, not pleasurable at all, and it's not even bad in a fun way. Like Slugs is bad in a fun way, man. That's a good movie to watch.
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, you just pretty much anything by Juan Peter Simon is just so inept in a lot of ways that you just can't help but take it as a bit of fun. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I would watch Slugs followed by a nice big dose of Squirm.
Oh, God. again, John Levin Good.
Yup. John, we're doing it. John, you're coming on, man. We're doing show. Bug hard with you.
We're just going to redo this show with John talking about the movies.
Nah, we're gonna have John on Do It Right.
Well, the last one I wanted to bring up, this is the last one, and this is a movie that I love because it's so bad.
Uh-oh.
And I know I brought it up a couple years ago on the show, but it's Tim Kincaid's Breeders. Have you seen Breeders?
Breeders? Hold on. Keep talking.
It's exactly what you think it is.
Great. That good, huh?
Well, it's essentially, it's like this alien on Earth is... kidnapping New York City virgins.
Is this from 86?
Yes.
I have never seen this.
We gotta watch it together, I think.
Oh, jeez, man! Oh, God, this looks phenomenal.
What's it got, like a 2-point something on the IMDb or something like that?
3.5, man.
Oh, that seems high. But, you know, I like... Tim Kincaid, he was a New York City based filmmaker who eventually, he's done gay porn. I guess that's what he's mostly known for, directing that.
Nice.
But he did these weird movies like in the mid 80s. He did Robot Holocaust, which was sent up on Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's one of their great episodes, actually. And he also did this really good Women in Prison,
Bad Girls Dormitory.
Yeah, I really like that one too. I mean, they're not artistic movies, but they're so freaking enjoyable in a low budget way. And Breeders is kind of the same way. It's like so just ridiculous, and the dialogue and the characters, and like the end of the movie has like one of these. It's just this truly, okay, spoiler alert, because everybody should go see this movie. I'll give you some time, but it's just. the alien has apparently corralled all of these virgins he's impregnated into like this weird kind of tub, and it looks like all these topless chicks are bathing themselves in alien cum. It's really bizarre.
And that inspired Ken Russell to do something really different with Lair of the White Worm.
Yeah, I was gonna say Ken Russell and Rob Zombie were probably thinking about Breeders when they made their movies.
Oh my gosh, I gotta see this thing. Holy hell, man.
I got a copy of it, Bill. I'll loan it to you.
Oh, I'm driving down to you, man. I'm watching it at your house. Holy hell. Wow.
Whatever you like, Bill. Whatever your pleasure.
Sewers are my pleasure, Johnny. Sewers are my pleasure.
But you know the thing with that movie, Bill, is it kind of has a, you know, Dave Kay would probably appreciate the authentic 1980s grittiness of New York City.
A Fiend on Film, yes.
I could totally be wrong, but like it feels like they're in an abandoned subway tunnel and sewer at the end of the film. So it's kind of there is a sense of, I don't know, as real as something like that can get, you know. I think it's kind of there. So
yeah, we need to do a show on New York City horror, man.
Oh, okay, that'll be our next show with Dave.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Driller Killer.
The Addiction. It'll be the Abel Ferreira cast with Dave K.
Dude, he'll be all over that. Oh man. Wow. So wow, we went Subterranean, Johnny.
We did, Bill. I don't know. I think I gotta wash the filth off now.
Yeah, that too. Hose myself down.
I usually have to pay for that, but yeah.
Well, after this, I'm going to go to a bathroom and a rat's going to bite my testicles, so it's going to really suck.
And then you'll turn into a chud. Turn into half rat, half chud.
Oh my, wow. Rat chud. Chud rat. There you go.
I'd rather watch that than Sharknado. I'd rather watch Chud Rat.
Chud Rat.
Hey, Lionsgate. A24, call me. I'm going to write this thing.
A24. Oh, yeah, they're on the phone right now, Johnny. Oh, my gosh. On that note, is it Scream Out time?
Yeah, and I've got some too, Bill, when you're done with yours.
All right. These are wonderful, amazing, awesome souls that you could find on Twitter. I'm going to give you their names and their Twitter handles and a little bit about them. So check them out, please, because we love them. And they, oddly enough, love us, although after this show, maybe not. Carol Mars Phipps, and you can follow her at Car01AM. I write fantasy, love my family, cats, and birds. I support indie authors and retweet. Go to her website, niarg.com. She is fabulous. The great, wonderful gentleman, Eddie Jose Morales. Follow him at Morales_EJ. He's an author of Fright Tales, a collection of short horror stories on Amazon. So definitely go to him there. Zombies, paranormal, and more. And he's followed by Z Nations, Keith Allen, actually. Florida, he's out of Florida. And also go to his website, eddiejosemorales.weebly.com. Another author, she's so wonderful. If you love dragons, you're going to love her. Teresa Snyder, and that's Teresa Snyder, 19, multi-genre author and social media addict, blogger and editor, reader and avid gardener. And you could go to her site, teresasnyderauthor.com. The great Skip Bolden, again, another gentleman. This he, absolutely fantastic human being. Marketing brands and entertainment, arts and leisure, award-winning filmmaker and producer, supports indie film. Where is he? Where we were talking about, where them resides, out in LA. Check him out on IMDb. You'll not be disappointed. The wonderful Anne Maria Redis. And that is, that's how you will find it. And Redis is Y-R-I-T-Y-S at the end of that. MBA, discoverer, innovator, journalist, writer, researcher, vocational teacher, world explorer, and she doesn't read DMs, so don't do that. And where is she? She's in Finland, Europe, Earth, and online. And you can go to her website of the same name. The phenomenal Tim Miller, Tim Miller 2011, horror author, not the director of Deadpool, if you didn't know. And you could, that's some douchebags film, as we know. And Deadpool Deadpool 2 is awesome, by the way. Check out his books on Amazon. Just look for him under Tim Miller. He's out of San Antonio. And go to timmiller.org. Scream Radio without the E. That is owned by the great Tracy underscore TR. And she's streaming radio dedicated to all things horror and more. She's also a wonderful mom, great friend, and one hell of a vocalist. And go to screamradio.com. Remember, cut off that E. The beautiful, lovely, vivacious Eve Irving, 69. She's a psychologist, author, illustrator, pagan. She's into books, English and sassy, so approach with caution or cookies. And she's really, really a wonderful soul. Definitely check her out. And her quips of wit are just amazing. We talked about him at the beginning of the show and quite often. He's palcoed us in the past, and we love the man. The great Palco Designs. That's Greg Palco. He's a lover, collector, and designer of horror. Super genius. Contact him. Go to palcodesigns.com for his site. So if you need any book covers, movie posters, records, whatever you want, he's the guy to design the art. And an absolutely fantastic woman who will be on the show in the near future is the great Ivana Cadaver. And Ivana Cadaver is the raven-haired temptress who haunts, teases, and tantalizes viewers each week on nationally syndicated macabre theater. Do not miss it. She's out of Los Angeles as well. And go to the website. It's awesome. MacabreTheater.com. If you love horror, you gotta love her. Johnny, what else you got?
I got a bunch, Bill.
A bunch? Holy shit.
I know, it's really out of character for me.
Totally.
First off, Kelly Cook at Benevolent Rule. It's an interesting bio. Tweet rate, 2 a week, comprised of horror, 48%, books, libraries, 29%, science, nature, human nature, 16%, board games, 3%, arts, 3%, personal political, 1%.
Wow, what a breakdown, man.
You've got an algorithm there.
Totally.
Next is Christopher Gibson at Literary Man 420, The Video Games, Horror Stuffs, Writer, I Don't Sleep, The Losers Club, Resist, Equality, owns the at Feature TV, Berenstein Shazam. At Guy Ricketts, the wonderful Guy Ricketts.
Love the man.
Storyteller through my writing, art, and photography. My writing page at iamthatwriterguy.simplesite.com. Check him out. He's awesome. Latasha Figueroa. At Latash Figueroa. Author with a... Yeah, she's great. Author with a bent towards the dark side. Yogi wannabe, music lover, unafraid of heights. And you can find her books on Amazon.
But what about Sewers, Johnny? Is she...
I think she needs to write a book about sewers next.
I bet she will, and you know what? She'll crush the damn thing. It'll be the scariest thing you ever read.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
C.A. Broadstone, that's Christopher Allen Broadstone, at Black Cab Prods on Twitter. He is just a multi-hyphenate, multi-threat horror film director, novelist, film video editor, screenwriter, and musician. I did the write-up for his upcoming film, Human No More, The Future, which is coming out in 2019. And he also opened up stores for two of his past musical projects, About Nine Times, which is kind of like a new wave project that he had in the 80s, and The Judas Ascension, which is like leaning more towards rock and metal. I mean, I've listened to The Judas Engine. They're pretty cool. So,
yes.
In any case, DM Elms.
Oh, gosh. Love it.
Yep, I do love D. Fake geek girl horror chick. Autistic. Solar baby. Eternian. Velma Dinkley lookalike from Care-A-Lot. Dee Dee to the world's laboratory.
In Dexter's lab.
Dee Dee.
Oh, Diddy. Sorry, go ahead. God, I loved it. First two seasons, damn, I loved that show.
That show was so much fun, yeah. Kim McDonald, the Dixie Fairy herself. Little horror junkie from Charleston. You can find my stories and reviews at fairymusings.wordpress.com, loudgreenbird.com, and mydailydead.com. Got a couple more, Bill, but I'm almost through. Gore Blimey.
Oh, yeah.
At I Am Gore Blimey, Podcaster, Chili Head, Archer's Addict, Eurovision fan, and lover of weird, campy horror movies. He runs the Trilogy of Terror podcast, which has been on hiatus for a couple of months. And he told me personally that he's going to be doing a new website, just giving the show a makeover, giving it a fine coat of paint. And he's going to be back soon. So I'm
fine coat of blood.
Oh, Lisa Sorrentino at My Little Rascal 8.
Yes.
Hubby and wife team make an indie film, support indie film, and they are responsible for the film adaptation of Isaac R. Thorne's Because Reasons short story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is out and making it's making the festival rounds right now. Jason Edward Davis at Lovin' Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I love his bio. It makes me smile each time. Awkward painter who loves drunk cats, sexy bears, angry character actresses, and other horror movie characters. Resident artist at queer-horror.com.
Yeah.
And Blissville at Vanya Veto. Vanya Veto wanders jungle towns, a babbling vagabond, but was once a famous rock star. His downfall was the addictive chicken head.
He's awesome.
True story, I was there.
Oh, wow.
And last but certainly not least is Adrian Rowe at First Scream 2.
Absolutely.
Creator and author of the First Scream to the Last trilogy, and the last version, which covers the 1970s in horror, is coming out this year, and I'm looking forward to it.
Wow, man.
That's a lot of scream outs, Billy.
That is, so I'm going to be brief. Okay. I'm Billy Crash. You can find me on Twitter at Crash Palace, and also go to CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and wonderful articles from some of the great people you've heard today, like Johnny, Dixie Ferry, DM Elms. Enjoy it. So, Johnny, what about you, man?
In addition to Crash Palace, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb, and you can also find some of my archived reviews over at loudgreenbird.com. I saw that Bill Meeker updated the profile for the Twitter profile for Loud Green Bird, and it says the website is now inactive. So,
right.
I know he's been going through some familial things, and it's been kind of rough.
Absolutely. So we're with him. Our best to him and his family. Bill Meeker's another wonderful gentleman. We've had him on the show before, and we will have him on again. Yes. Just a great human being, and we hope everything, you know, goes as well as it possibly can, and that we see and hear him more in the future.
We love you, Bill.
Totally.
And I love you too, Bill.
I love you, Johnny.
Even though you smell like shit right now.
Yeah, I know. The rat's getting ready to pop out of that toilet. So,
Bill, you got to stop saying that. I live in this city. There's probably going to be a rat in my toilet now.
Dude, rat's probably already walking around your apartment.
Hey, I got a cat to take care of that, man.
Cat's sleeping, Johnny.
What are you going to do now? A24 Lionsgate, come on. Call me.
Oh, boy. On that note, have a good night, my friend.
You too, Bill. See ya.
All right. Bye.
Bye.